Golazo.
Between the two practices of mindfulness of breathing and settling the mind, there's a marvelous complementarity, or kind of a symmetry between the two. In the sense that as you practice a mindfulness of breathing, really in any of the three modes, through that very quality of awareness you're bringing to the respiration that is very attentive, very soft, very clear, and non-invasive, just not messing with it at all. Then what you're allowing to happen in that process is the breathing then settles in its natural rhythm, and then that's the avenue for the whole prana system to be settling in a finer and finer and finer state of equilibrium. And what that means is, internally, is that the pranas are actually coming into the central channel and up to the heart chakra, which is where they converge when your mind dissolves into the substrate consciousness. Right? So that just happens naturally. And it's coming by way of the breath, so by way of settling your prana in its natural state. And it's really like they really naturally want to come into the center, and we just keep on elbowing them out with craving, hostility, hope, and fear. No, I don't want to achieve shamatha. I really don't want to achieve shamatha. Go away, shamatha. You know, we just stop doing that, and then they want to come home. And so there we have it. By way of prana, the mind settles in its natural state. By settling the mind in its natural state, conversely, just by focusing it on the space of the mind, then the pranas do the same thing. The respiration also will settle in its natural state. Same quality of awareness, and the complementarity there is really quite, there's a certain beauty to it. So in both cases, you will on occasion find it very difficult to detect the events arising, namely the sensations of the breath, in which case it's very important that you do have a baseline, something that you can always ascertain, maintain an ongoing, unbroken flow of knowing. So within the space of the body, it's the space of the body. And actually detecting that, whether it's the little background radiation at the nostrils, or whether it's simply apprehending the space of the body, because there is such a thing. And you can perceive it, not just imagine it. And you can perceive it with mental consciousness, right? So ascertaining that, and then you can see, you can perceive the fluctuations within that space, which are actually emerging from the space, that are the fluctuations of the sensations of the breath. Now, of course, the corollary is obvious. When you're settling the mind in its natural state, the baseline, whether or not there are thoughts, sometimes there are, sometimes there aren't, right? But what's your baseline? What are you always ascertaining? And that's the space of the mind. To ascertain that, to maintain that flow of knowing, and then in that space, then you see the fluctuations, the perturbations. Right? And then you note them when they occur. And then the mind just settles and settles and settles. Shamatha doesn't have to be that far away. But especially if the occasion arises for any of you here to decide, okay, I've had enough of life without shamatha. I've been there, done that, it sucks. And now ready to try life with shamatha, whole new dimension. Then for that duration, when you find the appropriate environment, companions, you put all the inner and the outer components together, it's very imperative that one of the inner components you really highlight, and that is when you're really intent on progressing along the path of shamatha. I've emphasized various things, being totally free of rumination, you've heard that one before. Being content and having few desires, you've heard that one before. But another really crucial one is in Tibetan, dunyung janyung, and that is have as few concerns and as few activities as possible. One of the things that's really a real killer is when you're in, and I don't mean literally, but I mean, when you're in the shamatha retreat and you have to engage with people who are not in shamatha retreat, who are not really devoting themselves to practice, which means they are devoting themselves to something else, and it's called samsara. And it's all their dramas, their hopes, their fears, their hedonic fixations, their emotional fluctuations, all their samsara. And if you're engaging with them, and I don't mean that you don't love them, you don't care for them, but if you're engaging with them, it's very unlikely you're going to pull them into shamatha. It's very likely they're going to pull you out of shamatha. Right? And they can just keep on throwing boulders in your track again and again and again and again, because there's no end to their samsara. When people are not devoting themselves to dharma, their samsara will go on indefinitely. I mean, like eternally, until you actually get around to Dharma. You know. The practice of shamatha doesn't need to go on eternally. But Atisha did say, you can practice for 1,000 years and never achieve it. If you could live that long, 1,000 years and never achieve it, if you haven't satisfied the prerequisites. Right? And one of those, keep it simple. Protect yourself. You're in an incubator here. Little babies in an incubator need lots of protection. They don't need to be exposed to outside viruses and bacteria and contaminations and so forth. They just need to protect because they're really fragile. And you take care of them during that time. Then the baby can get out of the incubator, out of the nursery, grow up, and then live anywhere the baby, the child, the adolescent, the person wishes. But there's a time when you just really want to take care of that baby. And it's probably more vulnerable than any other time in its life. And that's in the incubator. So when you're practicing shamatha, we call this the mind center, the shamatha retreat. I call contemplative observatories. We might want to call them contemplative incubators. Right? You really want to be protected. And if you're not, you can just be facing an awful lot of frustration. Just frustration, always getting these spikes, all the big oscillations up and down, because you're engaging with the outside world and it's all ups and downs. That's what samsara is. It's just loopity-loopity-loopity-loop, up and down forever. So, give yourself a break. If you really withdraw from the world for a while, really do that strategic retreat, and radically transform your mind, at least to shamatha, but better, you know, go on to vipassana, go on to develop bodhicitta, real, authentic, irreversible bodhicitta, and then you come back, oh, then you can really be a benefit. Then they'll be glad that you were gone. Thank goodness for what you brought back. But if you allow the world to keep on nagging you, then when you come back, you're just one of the gang. Hey, samsaric person, I'm a samsaric person too. Not much benefit. Hola, so let's practice. In a spirit of loving kindness, to really heal your body and your mind, to explore and to realize a deeper dimension of equilibrium, of balance, of equipoise than you've ever experienced before, to really something very wonderful for yourself. With such a motivation, settle your body, speech, and mind in the natural state, and calm the discursive mind for a little while with mindfulness of breathing. Now with your eyes at least partially open, your gaze vacant. Single-pointedly direct your attention to the space of the mind and whatever arises within it. Maintaining the flow of mindfulness without distraction and without grasping. If you're not yet accustomed to the practice, you may find it helpful to maintain a peripheral awareness of the respiration and making a special emphasis to relax ever so deeply and fully with every out-breath, totally releasing the breath. Allowing the in-breath to flow in of its own accord without taking it, without encouraging it, without pulling it, just letting it flow in. Now take a special interest in the intervals between thoughts, when the space of the mind is most evident, and observe closely that space. consider that the space of the mind is always present and therefore always ascertainable, most evident between thoughts, but consider that it is the very space out of which thoughts emerge, that thoughts themselves are nothing other than configurations of that space, present within it. And it is the space into which thoughts eventually dissolve. Perhaps it is this very space that the Buddha was referring to when he said that all phenomena are preceded by the mind, issue forth from the mind, consist of the mind. Monitor the flow of mindfulness with introspection, apply the remedies as before, and let's continue practicing in silence. Olaso, throughout the course of the day, between sessions, during sessions, if you allow your breath to continue to flow in that natural rhythm, and allow your mind to continue settling in its natural state, and then regardless of what happens to you, it will be a good day. Enjoy your day.